Word of mouth.
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 Mouth. From New Hampshire Public Radio, this is Word of Mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott. Most people's understanding of the economy comes from explanations by experts on the news. Maybe there's a vaguely remembered college course called Econ 101, where you learned basic principles of economics. What is often presented to the public is a superficial version of market theory with little bearing on today's complex global systems. With such a slight understanding, consumers and policymakers are held captive to the so-called experts. Michael Lind co-wrote with Robert Atkinson an article called Econ 101 is Killing America for Salon.com. He's here to discuss why a basic understanding of economic theory may actually hurt more than it helps. Michael, great to have you back on Word of Mouth.
Great to be back.
Michael Lind, what's wrong with Econ 101?
We use Econ 101 as shorthand for the series of misconceptions and oversimplifications that inform a lot of the debate about economics, both among politicians and among commentators. I should make it clear we're not necessarily criticizing Econ 101 classes or textbooks. Rather, by Econ 101, we simply mean the basic ideas that, for example, markets are always efficient, that free trade always benefits all sides, that higher wages will always lead to unemployment, which is the stock and trade of the political class, which doesn't have a lot of sophisticated economic education.
You challenge the idea of economics as a science. If not a science, what is it?
Well, it's a practical policy art informed both by history and journalism. Experience of actual economies, actual businesses, industries, nation states, provides the data on which economics, or as it used to be called, political economy, is based. So Robert Atkinson and I criticize the idea that there is some sort of realm called the economy, which operates according to universal timeless principles. Unfortunately, economists for the last century have been trying to convert economics from a practical art of governance into science, or as we would argue, a pseudoscience modeled on physics, chemistry, or another natural science.
I'm glad you mentioned physics, because in the article you write, relying on Econ 101 is like a physicist today relying on Newton. Are these principles so outdated?
Well, the problem is the principles aren't even necessarily valid today. We criticize the reliance of many policymakers and pundits on superficial introductory courses, whereas even in academic economics, the senior-level courses introduce all kinds of complications. For example, in introductory economics, people are often taught that the normal market is one with perfect competition and many small firms competing with each other. In large sectors of the real-world economy, there are natural monopolies or oligopolies with economies of scale or network effects and imperfect markets. Now, the literature of imperfect markets lacking effective competition goes back generations to the late 1930s and even before. But unless you're an advanced graduate student in economics, you never encounter this. And so a lot of people with a very introductory education walk away from university teaching with the impression that markets are naturally competitive, whereas in reality only some are.
Are those ideas and principles that are taught in advanced economic theory, are they just too big for your average American to grasp, or maybe your average media report to communicate in a soundbite?
No, I don't think so. In fact, I think that the real-world version of economics, because it draws on common sense, is somewhat easier to understand. For example, most people intuitively understand that there are some industries dominated by a few large corporations. For example, in aerospace, two companies, Boeing and Airbus, dominate world markets. And that creates all kinds of problems for public policy involving monopoly, industrial policy on behalf of the U.S. and Europe, which don't exist in the very simplified world of neoclassical economics, where the government just gets out of the way and allows competition to work. But I think ordinary people, you know, understand the complexities, and it would be better if we spoke about particular industries and particular markets the aerospace industry versus the nursing home industry, for example,
mm-hmm.
Instead of pretending that there's the single set of equations which can explain all markets all the time.
So markets do not exist in a vacuum. And this is one of the myths that you knock down in your article, the idea that the economy is a market. So what is it then?
Well, if you look at actual modern economies like that of the United States and other developed countries, about half of the economy, half of GDP, goes to the government in the form of taxes and is paid out in the form of public spending and transfer payments, such as Social Security and Medicare.
So there's no free market there.
That's right. And then if you look at the remaining maybe 50%, you have the household sector, which is probably undercounted. That is economic activity when you cook at home instead of eating in a restaurant, for example. So you have to remove that. So that leaves you with maybe 30-40% of GDP, which can be called private sector economic activity. And within that, once you carve out monopolistic markets like a publicly regulated electricity and water sewage utilities and natural monopolistic corporations of the kind we mentioned, like Boeing and Airbus, the actual purely competitive markets with lots of small firms that cannot name their own prices but have to take them because it's an efficient competitive market really is a minority of economic activity in a modern so-called capitalist country.
Well, there are a number of policymakers who would like to peel back those big percentages of public expenditures. Is that desire an unnuanced understanding of economics?
Well, it's perfectly legitimate to argue that in some cases, achieving a public purpose by means of competitive markets would be more efficient and less costly than doing it by means of government subsidies or by direct public provision. So Rob Atkinson and I have no objection to that in principle. However, you have to make that on a case-by-case basis. And the problem in public discourse is, because of this superficial understanding that we use the shorthand Econ 101 to describe, it's very easy for conservatives and libertarians to always assert that in any particular area, markets will be more effective than other kinds of policies. And that may be the case in some areas, but not in others.
I have to admit that sometimes when I hear economists talking about economic theory, I just get sort of lost and glaze over and in some ways give over the role to the quote-unquote experts. What role do you think economists should have in shaping public policy?
Well, I think that particular economists who are specialists in particular areas, if their work is informed by empiricism and by looking at data in the real world, can perform a valuable function as advisors to our democratically accountable public policymakers. But the problem is the economy is extremely complex. And if you really want to be an expert, let's say, in public utility regulation, it takes most of your career to do that. So the mere fact that you have a degree in economics does not allow you to hold forth with any authority on all sorts of areas, ranging from trade to utilities to manufacturing to labor markets. And unfortunately, particularly in the last generation, economists have been treating their economics education as though it made them masters of all trades.
Mm. Are there any basic economic principles that you, Michael Lind, think everybody should know?
Well, I'm not sure there are, because you have to remember, if this were truly a timeless universal science, it would have to identify principles that were true for Ice Age hunter-gatherer tribes, Neolithic village agrarians, and modern large-scale multinational corporations and modern giant nation-states. So I think the idea that you can learn a few basic universal timeless rules in Econ 101, and this will be a magic key explaining the economic phenomena of the real world, it's very attractive and beguiling idea, but I think it's a misleading one.
Michael Lind, author and regular contributor to Salon.com, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Now you can read Michael's article, Econ 101 is Killing America, on wordofmouthradio.org.